Hello, everybody, to my presentation. My name is Günter Deschner. I work for Red Hat, obviously. I'm a member of the Samba team, and I will talk about a subject that I've been busy with looking at for the last couple of weeks, almost months. And okay, my slides are not working at all. Sorry. Okay, let's just restart this. Okay, maybe now it works. Yeah, now it works. Great. Okay, so some very brief words about myself. It's Red Hat. We are really a quite large group of Samba developers, and currently we have seven people, which are Samba team members as well, that work for Red Hat, mostly put in two different teams. The one is the identity team, and the other is the storage group. I was a member of the identity team earlier, but now I work for the storage team together with Ira and Jose and Michael Adam. So, I've been around with the Samba team for now almost 11 years and 8 years as Red Hat. And, obviously we use Samba for all kinds of our solutions and products, in particular some parts of FreeIPA use Samba technology, some parts of SSSD use Samba, and the storage group, of course, also heavily relies on Samba. So, my presentation will deal with the witness protocol that has already been mentioned in a couple of other talks today. The plan is to really first... to give a very brief introduction into what witness actually is, and then describe a little bit what actually the protocol has been designed for and what it is replacing, and what are the predecessors of that kind of technology. So I'll talk a little bit about failover in the earlier SMB dialects, from SMB1 and SMB2. I will talk about failover technologies with CDDB and Samba, and then finally talk about the witness protocol itself and how we actually plan to implement this protocol in Samba. So witness is really a funny name for a protocol. There are tons of jokes about it. I won't repeat them. So what is witness? It's basically really a new DC-RPC service that has been invented in order to make failover and client reconnects much more predictable, much more plannable, much more controllable. So it's really about to generate prompt and explicit notifications about failures in highly available systems, in particular in file clusters. And it's one of the building blocks of actually the SMB story with continuous availability in Windows clusters. So in earlier times, failover with SMB 1 and SMB 2, it was really much more a client-triggered mechanism that actually allowed to find a better node to reconnect to and to reestablish the connection to. And it was basically really relying on timeouts of either the TCP connection or some other things. So it has really quite some downsides. It's quite unpredictable what it will, when it will react and when it will reconnect. It is, of course, slow because sometimes the timeouts are really long. And it's also quite a challenge for some of the applications to deal with it. And some don't really react very well when they're just sitting on a stale connection. So here are some graphics trying to explain how the failover actually was working in the earlier SMB dialects. So you have a client which is connected to a three-node Windows cluster on the right side. So I've put in SMB2 server, but it could actually also be SMB1 server. So the client is just connecting to the node 1, and now a failure occurs. The SMB server on node 1 has an issue, and the client has right now probably not even noticed that, that there is an issue with the server on node 1. So it will just take a time until the client is trying to reuse the connection and then running into an issue, noticing that the connection is dead, and it will then try to connect to another node in the cluster and reestablish the connection. So I think the overall design is quite obviously not a very elegant solution. So in Samba and with the cluster development that happened in Samba with CDDB, it has been became, oh, this is just really getting very annoying. Okay, it's better. No, no, I think it's okay. So with C3B, they had, of course, the same issue. They needed to make sure that they can quickly reconnect clients in case of a node failure. And in C3B, there is, of course, much more backend infrastructure. Like if you look on the graphics soon in the next slides, you will see that on each node, of course, there's running a C3B node. And there's an inter-process communication between the C3B nodes, so they can much better coordinate failures. They can communicate failure events inside of the cluster, and then react appropriately and cause the client to reconnect. So the mechanism that is actually used in order to issue a very prompt reconnect and reestablishment of the session is the so-called TCL-ACK mechanism, which is a mechanism that is has been discovered by Tritch back in 2007 while he was working on CTDB. And that mechanism has really become so famous, so to say, that it's right now even a cluster resource. It's a resource agent in the Pacemaker project, which is a cluster resource manager, other than CTDB. So how do the failover work in CTDB? So the client again is connected to the cluster, in this case again to the node one. And you see the connecting lines between the CTDB nodes. So they maintain a communication protocol in the background, not visible to the client, where they can communicate their state. So now an event happens, the server on node one has an issue and fails. And CTDB is aware of this failure probably earlier than the client is. So it can immediately act upon this failure and start an IP takeover. And in this case, it will choose the node 2 to take over the public IP address the client has been connected to. And it will then, from that node 2, send a TCL-ACK packet to the client, which will cause the client to immediately reestablish the connection to the node 2. So the client will just very promptly and very quickly have valid connection reestablished in that case. So that's, of course, a much better, a much more predictable and controllable event of dealing with failover. So, of course, these problems have been known and been addressed for the SMB3 protocol. So as one of the features for the SMB3 protocol itself, there is this new transparent failover concept, and this concept consists really of many items. I've listed some of these, like persistent handles, which we've been talking a lot already about, continuous availability, and of course the witness servers, which I will talk now next. And the idea is really to provide a mechanism to have much faster recovery from unplanned node failures, but also to have a way to actually control the client and to really reroute client connections to different nodes inside of a cluster and to share the load, for example, or to plan maintenance events inside of your cluster, these sorts of things. And all of that is dealt with in the witness protocol. So this is now the very simplified view of the SMB3 Windows cluster is set up with witness servers sitting on each node, so you have not only the SMB server but also the witness server, very similar to the picture where you had the CTDB in picture. So the client again is connected to node one, and what the client does is at the same time when it has established the SMB connection, it will also use the witness protocol in order to make a request to get the list of interfaces of the cluster. So that gives it enough information about IP addresses, about the witness service being started or available on the individual nodes and so forth. We're going to see some more details later when we talk about the protocols opcodes. So what basically it gets, the client is knows all the nodes in the cluster, what IP addresses they have, and if they are available. So there's one important detail. When the client receives the list of these nodes, then, of course, witness, as the concept, the service is supposed to actually witness the existence of other services on other nodes. So that means that by design, it will always exclude itself from the list of consumable nodes in order to do a witness communication with. for the very simple idea, of course, that if the witness server dies on the same node that is witnessing the existence of the SMB connection, it doesn't really make sense, because in a cluster it's much better to let another node, like node 2 or node 3, be the witness for the SMB server on node 1. So the client will do this and pick one of the nodes. In this case, it just has picked node 2. It told the witness server that it wants to register for asynchronous notify events, so that it wants to be aware of any resource changes, for example, or some failover scenarios. And when it has established this request, it will just send an asynchronous notify request and just wait. So not that it's really expecting something, but it will just wait. And the server will not reply until there's really an error event occurring on the server. So right now, we have again a failure of the SMB server on node 1. And the witness server on node 2 will actually inform the client that there has been going on node 1. And the client can then, whatever, immediately re-establish the connection to another node, in this case to node 3. So that's from the overall concept. You might now think, okay, this is something very similar to the TCLAC concept, where we actually had the new destination call out to the client and let the client reconnect to the new node. So why do we have a new protocol here? So this is really important to point out that it's not really about just IP failover scenarios, where there is really something, an unexpected event occurring on the server. But this is also really to have a way to programmatically control the client to do something. Because when you have this asynchronous notification established, you can, whatever, even if there's nothing occurring, like a server failure or so, you can just tell the client to do something. For example, to move to another node because you want to take node out for server maintenance or something like that. So it's really, once you have really established the this channel, it's just a perfect way to really programmatically deal with client and server connections in a cluster in a much better way. So the witness interface itself is really a very simple interface. So it was actually, from looking at the protocol specification, one of the shortest PDFs I've ever read. It's only 47 pages, which is really very nice. I've read it many times, and I always thought I have forgotten or overread something, but no, everything is in that document. And it has two versions. One is version 1 that got established with SMB 3, with Windows 2012 and Windows 8. And there's a second version that came with SMB 3.02, so Windows 2012 R2 and Windows 8.1. And it just consists of 5 opcodes. I will just go through all them and talk a little bit about them. So there's this one call that I've mentioned already, where the client goes to the server and asks for the list of interfaces in that node. It really returns the list of the network addresses, including IPv4 and IPv6 interfaces. And each interface carries information about the server state, where the witness started, what version is it actually using, and so forth. And also if it is actually a good candidate to use for witnessing the SMB connection witness. So this is how one of these structures look like that will be sent back to the client. So you see it has a witness version, witness state available, an IP address only, an IPv4 address. And it has this flags field and this last bit. That's really the important thing that actually tells the client, I can use this IPv4 address as a destination to register for for witness asynchronous notifications. So when that flag is missing, and it will be missing it will be missing for that particular interface whether the client is currently connected to. So this is the register call. It's only available for version 1, so there's a new call for version 2. And it's just very simple. The client just gives a net name, which is really a server name, so not a share name or so. It will just register for events for the whole server. is cluster name? All right, okay. Yeah, right. Okay. So it's a cluster name.
The name to which you mount, if you open server rack share web file, it's a server name.
Yep, yeah. So it's, you're right, it's not node one, but in that case, it would whatever file server or something like that. Okay, yeah. Okay, so this is the register call. Of course, there's an unregistered call in case the client, whatever, is rebooting or for some reason has no more interest in receiving notifications. The async notify call, this is now the real call that the client sends out. The important thing is really it's an asynchronous call, so receiving back a reply for this call can really take a long time in the cluster. And
Whatever happened, the cluster will be fine.
Yep.
It'll stay silent.
Yep. Yeah. For that reason, it's also important that it's not whatever continuously retrying to get information out of the cluster when the only state would be the cluster is fine. So it's not really kind of a heartbeat protocol. Although there is a new keep alive mechanism available in the later version of Witness 2 that allows actually. In a client-controlled way to verify that the connection is still up and running. So I will talk about this when we look at the other register call. So what can the async notify call actually send back? Currently, there are, with the version 2 of the Witness protocol, there are four different notification events. One is really the resource change that would basically tell if a resource will actually be available or unavailable. So this is what will be transported over that. Then there is a witness notify client move that would actually be used in order to route the client to another destination. So to control the client or to programmatically let the client reconnect to somewhere else. Then for version 2, there's the witness notify share move, which is a notification to let the client know that just one share has been moved inside of the cluster to another node. And then, of course, there's the witness notify IP change, also only available for version 2, that lets the client get a notification if there has been some IP address changes on the server. If one IP address has gone on or offline, for example. So with Windows 2012 R2 and the second version of the Witness protocol, there came this new register X call, which has some slight additions to the other register call. Basically, there's one new argument for the share name, and there is a flags field, and there's a keep alive timeout the client can pass in. And as I mentioned earlier, when the client and I think Windows 8.1 sends 120-second keep alive timeout by default, causing the server to reply with a specific error timeout message when this timer has expired. So after the 120 seconds, the server will reply error timeout, and the client will immediately call the async notify again for another 120 seconds. So it's really a keep alive mechanism that one can establish with that. But it's an optional behavior, so it could also be just left zero and then it will not do that. Right, so there is this other new optional argument, the share name, that if it is filled in by the client, allows to actually receive notifications when not a server change has happening, but a share change has happening. So that actually allows to get informed when a share has been migrated or if the client should use a share on a different node because there are whatever better performance expectations on another node or so. I haven't really looked too deep into that new feature, but it is apparently called asymmetric file shares, which would be a scenario where the client is connected to different shares on different nodes in one cluster. Right, so it's quite some technology, mostly not so much really implementation work, but a lot of concepts really play together here. And Yeah, we want to have an implementation of the witness service, of course, in summer as well. So there has been some very early work going on, done by Stefan Metzmacher and Gregor Beck. I think already in 2012 they were working on this. Correct me if I'm wrong, Stefan, if you're here. Yeah, all right. I haven't really looked up the dates, but it was really quite old stuff. At the time, of course, when you're looking at new protocols, you always want to see a Wireshark dissector for this as well, so they created one. It hasn't gone upstream yet, so unfortunately, I need to verify why this is not the case. So Samba has a full IDL for this interface, of course. It has some torture tests. I will talk about this a little bit later. This has been stuff I've been just recently working on, and that's all pushed to master now. As Michael already pointed out, it's really one of the projects that we have put on the Samba roadmap, really as a funded project. So that means that we are realistically working on this together with my other colleague, Jose, who's sitting here. We actually, just before the conference, we were quite heavily working on getting a pilot working that we hopefully could demo. But yeah, we didn't really succeed finishing it up, so I don't show it. What it basically would do right now is to sit there, wait for asynchronous notifications, and then we would let it connect back to itself. So it's a bit bizarre to actually demo, because it will just keep on reconnecting to itself. And yeah, it's not really a good demo. So we need to get some other pieces of infrastructure really first in place, so that we can make a more, more useful demo, or demo that really shows how we actually plan to use it then in production. So the goal is really to have it in the next major Samba release, in Samba 4.3. But we have quite some infrastructure requirements that we have to work on first. Yeah, as always in Samba development, we really have a strong focus on really first writing a test to verify that the protocol documentation is really appropriate, and everything is, that we fully understand the protocol, how it behaves. So from Gregor Beck, we already had some quite nice set of commands for the RPC client utility for witness manipulation, for registration, waiting for asynchronous notifications and so forth. That one can use actually to play with the protocol a little bit. So I created some SMB torture tests, one for verifying that we fully understand the IDL, which is really not very complicated, so that was easy. And I created an RPC witness torture test as well, that really tries to check all the invalid and valid combinations, pretty much like the Microsoft test suites do as well, in order to really verify the documentation, so everything has progressed quite well in there, just until the fact that when you test the asynchronous notify call, it's a bit hard from a testing perspective if you're just only focusing on that protocol. How do you actually can make this, the Windows cluster do something that you can act upon? And I was looking, because for me it was also a new experience setting up a Windows cluster and playing with the failover cluster manager and looking into that. And then I understood that there is this really very massive cluster management API interface, which is used by that GUI. And that interface is really a very easy way to actually turn up a node, turn down a node, and move some resources inside your cluster, and really to do all kind of manipulating things that would actually cause then a witness to react upon several things. So yeah, it took me a while really to have a working IDL for this interface, because this interface is really a monster. It has more than 200 opcodes, and at least for the version I was looking at, it has a more than 600 pages PDF file. I really haven't read it all. I was really just trying to understand the broader concepts of how this interface is supposed to work. And yeah, we have IDL and we have a torture test that whatever just starts node, pauses nodes, resumes nodes, and all these things. So it's of course interesting, because that protocol we could easily use in actually to make it a front end for CTDB management, because a lot of concepts really align very well between Windows cluster and CTDB, some not, but that would be very neat if one could use the Windows failover cluster manager in order to manipulate CTDB. Okay, I pressed the wrong button. Okay. Right, but that was really just a sidetrack. So what do we need in order to have witness really fully implemented? There are some requirements from the DCRPC infrastructure. We need to have endpoint mapper with NCAC and IPTCP support. This, of course, we have in Samba. We need to have an asynchronous RPC server. This is something we currently don't have in Samba, which means that all the RPC calls, they just immediately want to return an error code or a structure or whatnot, a reply to the client, without really having the ability to wait there until something is happening. So there have been two attempts to address this, one from David Düsseldorp, who's sitting over there. Yeah, he was looking at this when he was working on the snapshot RPC service. In the end, he was not using asynchronous RPC, but he came up with one of the first implementations of that. Then, of course, Stefan Metzmacher has also started an implementation of that. That's not yet finished. There he is, just entering. So we need to make a decision what, how to continue with that and how to flesh out the missing pieces. Also, we need asynchronous RPC for various other protocols, including the asynchronous printing protocol that have been that I have been looking at earlier as well. So we need asynchronous RPC server, and we need to have an implementation of the management service, which is a service management interface on top of each RPC service implementation that is basically used in order to give principal names that the client is supposed to use when it is authenticating to a particular RPC service. Yeah, so we have two implementations of that as well. Need to make a decision. The relationship to the SMB 3 server itself, they are quite minimal. We basically have only one flag that we need to announce in the Tree Connect reply that we send back to the client, the capability cluster. So for testing right now, I just use a parametric option that allows me to set this for specific shares. Now the WitnessD server that we currently use is still a forked binary from SMBD, so it's not something independent. In the long run, of course, it needs to be an independent binary in the same way, like for example, the SpoolSS daemon that we've been working on earlier. We need to put quite some messaging channels into it so that we can actually signal the WitnessD server from outside and cause specific events to be consumed by the WitnessD server and then reported back to the clients so that we can whatever glue CTDB and the WitnessD server together and also have probably third parties providing them a way to actually cause notifications. So there are lots of things that we need to work and look on right now. Currently, Volker's giving a talk about messaging. I would love to attend it, but apparently I couldn't. So I need to talk with him about various aspects as well. Then, of course, we also need to have a witness client. That's also something the SMB client or the kernel SIFS module would be probably also interested in, which would then represent all this client engine of actually picking a good witness server in a cluster, communicating with it, and consuming the notifications that the server is sending out, these sorts of things. And yeah, this is something we haven't really yet started on, but we need to make ideas for. Yeah, so I come to the end. I'm always over the time. So if you want to continue reading about this, of course, the protocol documentations from Microsoft, MSS, WN, and some very brief mentioning of the service in MSSMB2. If you have too much time, you can read the MSCMRRP, which is the failover cluster management protocol, this large thing I mentioned. There are some nice blog articles also about comparing timeout mechanisms between the various SMB protocol dialects. And also on the Samba wiki, we have one page where we kind of collect ideas how to continue with this implementation of that service. And yeah, that's about it. You have any questions?
I've been thinking about witness quite a bit, obviously, on the client because, you know, in some sense, it's more important on the client because people don't like hanging while you're trying to write out pages, you know, you're short on memory and, you know, your server is moved and the client's waiting for a timeout on TCP, which could take minutes.
Yep.
So witness protocol notification would be very helpful. But there were a couple questions technically I didn't remember, you know, how to figure out. Does Windows, if you have multiple users logged on, register witness for each user on the client?
This is a good question. You're thinking about terminal servers or?
Well, I mean, think about a typical Linux box.
Yeah.
You may be running as one, you know, you may be running some virtual whatever as one user ID, you know, Coke and Pepsi on the same box. And I was thinking that witness protocol allows you to notify about resource changes by share fairly granularly. And I'm wondering if it's typical that if you had the Coke-Pepsi case, right? Coke is running a VM and Pepsi is running a VM, different users going to the same Samba server cluster or Windows server cluster. If the cluster wants to rebalance what Coke is doing but not what Pepsi is doing, it would be very convenient if it could send out witness notifications to just one or the other. But I don't know if...
Right.
If no, no. What I meant is that the host has a share that is mounted with one user ID and another share that's mounted with another user ID. Same client, physical client. Does the physical client, in the Windows case, typically register more than once or just once? Once for the whole system or once for...
I don't know the answer to this, so I think maybe you know the answer.
It registers once for every server name, share name pair. Right, roughly for every tree connect.
But
and there are funny things happen, though, when there's a move, right? Because a move is special in that nothing is failed, and some of the traffic on a given connection needs to move to another server. So additional witness registrations can fork off of, if you will, existing witness registration in that case. But in general, I'm not sure I understand the Coke and Pepsi thing. That depends on how you've implemented the connections to the VMs.
No, assume you have two shares, two tree connects.
So it's two tree connects. Each tree connect, if it saw the share cap cluster, each one of those tree connects will result in a witness. So there will be two witness registrations, and they would, you know, flow back.
Okay, so if I mount to slash home as Tom, and mount to slash home as, I don't know, Chris, in a Windows case, you would have two registrations, since those are two tree connects.
With witness V2, yes. With witness V1, there might be only one, because it will share.
Okay. Well, the good news about that is it allows the server a lot of flexibility if it wants to have one move but not the other for load balancing. That's good. Yeah. So this is really good for V2. And I can negotiate that dialect. So I don't know if there's a...
V2 is what you want. Let's interoperate with Server 2012, which is pretty much obsoleted by Server 2012 R2.
So from the client perspective, it's easy to negotiate 302. From the server perspective, it's a little harder. Samba doesn't, as far as I know, negotiate 302 dialect yet, but it doesn't really matter because the client does. Now, on the client side... What?
You on the stick?
I do. The client does, so I don't care.
The
client's fine. The client... But the bigger question now is... For the client cases, SMB client typically doesn't stay around long enough. Maybe a file transfer or something. It's like FTP or TAR or something. But we're around a long time, the Linux SIFS client. So we have to figure out how to pass security context back and forth. Or, you know, we do RPC calls, obviously, through the Linux kernel client, but only for DFS. So we have to deal with offline about how to pass these RPC calls with the right security context.
This is, of course, great work, and one of the things, of course, there's an underlying assumption, and the underlying assumption is that it is transparent. So all the state on the backend file system,
right,
when you reconnect to, actually needs to be exactly like it was on the other node.
Right, right.
that is requiring quite a bit of work.
Sure.
And you can only fail someone over if the state on the other side is indeed fully synchronized.
Absolutely. So it's just one building block. It's relatively easy to implement, I would say, but it doesn't really make sense on its own. So of course it's...
Don't just redirect clients to something where the state is different, then bad things will happen.
It's really just one component of bringing the SMB3 to Samba. So it's just one building block.
And so we were just in the CTDB talk, and it was kind of really confusing because if what CTDB is trying to do is enabling the transparent failover, like part of the metadata state for NTFS is simulated in Samba, and that needs to be replicated over CTDB. So you can easily reconnect to something that isn't quite in sync, and then hell will break loose.
Yep. Good point. Other questions?
You said it's planned for Samba 4.3. What approximate date would that map to?
Given the current release planning, it will be, I think, Michael, correct me if I'm wrong, in half a year? In a year.
Oh, so relatively soon. That sounds great.
I think what you meant to say is whenever you manage to have your backend actually be really fully transparent, you will enable this, right?
I mean, shipping the witness server and enabling it are just two different things.
Well, but it really is, you know, you can use it for all kinds of fun things, even if the server's not ready for it. It's a great infrastructure play right now.
Absolutely. For the clients, we have all the infrastructure there.
And after all, I got a server you can use that client against. We know of at least one industry implementation that has sub 5 second failover as a third party implementation, like 2-3 seconds. They just push the button, the witness tells Windows, and poof, 3 seconds later, it's up and running on another node.
It's not timeout based, it's literally as quick as you can disconnect, reconnect, and reopen those windows. You're off.
Right.
Sorry. You succeed. Sorry.
I'm sorry. The thing about the semantics is really important, right? So someone who's burned up the needs in the sub-semantics actually can bring those values at all. So, fully part of that.
Any more questions? So then thank you, Gunther.
Okay.